This episode is brought to you by State Farm. What do your music playlists and podcast feeds have in common? They're a reflection of you. And that's how the State Farm Personal Price Plan works, too. It gives you options to personalize your coverage so you can protect what you care about most at an affordable price that's just for you. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Go to statefarm.com today to create your State Farm Personal Price Plan. Prices vary by state. Options selected by customer. Availability and eligibility may vary.
Hi, this is Will Arnett. We are inviting you to follow us as we go on tour and we take our podcast Smartless on the road. Join us and watch any boundaries we previously had disappear. Like you've never seen us before, you'll see us on the road ordering lunch, roasting each other, and on stage as we surprise each other with a mystery celebrity guest in each city. Boy, that sounds amazing.
Welcome to Smartless!
Don't miss our new series, Smartless on the Road, streaming only on Max. Subscription required.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
To have Yogi not included in the greatest living players of 2015, I mean, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't quite understand that.
There are only two people with more than 350 home runs and fewer than 500 strikeouts in the whole history of Major League Baseball. And their names are Joe DiMaggio and Yogi Berra.
And that is Joe Maddon and Marty Appel. Joe Maddon, a great manager. Marty Appel, unbelievable insight. He's a PR guy for the Yankees, been around forever. And he really knows just about every Yankee worth knowing, including Yogi Berra. Lindsay Berra is in studio with us now. If you're smart enough to get the stream, you're watching her. She is the granddaughter of Yogi Berra and executive producer of the new documentary, It Ain't Over. Lindsay, great to see you in person.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what made you realize, you were getting concerned that people were forgetting about your dad and how great he was?
Yeah, we opened the documentary at the 2015 All-Star Game, and they had a ceremony pregame presenting the four greatest living players. And it was Hank Aaron, Johnny Bench, Sandy Koufax, and Willie Mays. But I was sitting there watching the presentation with my very much alive Grandpa Yogi, and I looked at him and I said, "Are you dead?" And he said, "Not yet," because while all of those players are amazing, and I don't think he should have replaced any of them, he should have been the fifth person out there with 10 World Series championships, which is more than all four of them combined. But at that point, I hadn't really started about thinking about making a documentary. Grandpa was still with us. He passed away a few months after that. It was a few years later when our producer, Peter Soboloff, he actually saw the Mr. Rogers documentary and wondered why there was not a documentary like that about my Grandpa Yogi, and he brought the idea to my dad and uncle.
Did you call him Yogi?
I called him Grandpa.
Okay.
I didn't call him Yogi. Grandpa. So when you watch the documentary, I actually narrate the documentary, and it was really hard for me to call him Yogi or Yogi Berra. So I kind of go back and forth between calling him Grandpa and calling him Yogi in the doc when the director said, "We're going to have to use his name sometimes, Linz."
Understood. So in terms of, did it bother him that he wasn't out there? Did it bother him that sometimes people thought didn't know what he did on the field because he was such a fun-loving guy?
So my grandfather was very able to let things roll off of his back. When he first broke into the big leagues, they said that, and they, writers, other players, said he looked like a gorilla, he looked like an ape, he looked like a fire hydrant, he looked like a fat girl running in a too tight skirt. He was too ugly to be a Yankee. They wrote in the newspaper he was too ugly to be a Yankee. First of all, I don't know what that means. Second of all, if you look at pictures of him when he was young, he was kind of handsome. So I don't know what they were talking about. He very famously said, "I never saw anyone hit with his face." So he didn't really care what other people thought. I think that's a product of that generation. He went through the D-Day invasion at Normandy. He was a machine gunner on an LCSS going ashore, providing cover fire for our troops at Omaha Beach. You don't live through an actual life or death situation and come home without some perspective. He was very grateful to be here when so many other men were not. And he really did approach the rest of his life with gratitude for every minute and a profound sense of joy. The man was playing a kid's game for a living, and that was what he cared about.
What personalities from his own block? Joe Garagiola, who ended up being this big personality and hosted the Today Show, he was a catch with the Cardinals. And he said, no one ever thought I was great. He goes, I wasn't even the best person on my block
because
I grew up with Yogi Berra.
They grew up directly across the street from each other, 5447 and 5446 Elizabeth Avenue on the hill in St. Louis. And Jack Buck actually grew up down the street. And then there were also five guys from the hill who made the 1950 World Cup soccer team who beat England for the first time. Great athletes on the hill. It's crazy. And they
What do you mean by hill? What's that?
The hill was the Italian section in St. Louis.
Wow. That is fascinating. I did not know that. That was the greatest game. Here's Derek Jeter and Roger Angel talking about what kind of person and what kind of player he was. Cut 44.
Sometimes a pitcher gives away their pitches to a hitter. If you're paying close attention to the pitcher, he could come down so far for a fastball, come down low for a curveball. You watch it.
Then Yogi hits one out in the right field.
He hit with power, and the amazing thing was almost never struck out.
Because he swung at everything. And that's the key. You can't strike out if you don't get two strikes, right? If you don't get the two strikes. And Yogi swung at everything. He's probably one of the best bad ball hitters there was in the game.
That's interesting that Jeter would know that.
Yeah, so Grandpa went had his feud with Steinbrenner for 14 years and then made up and went back to the ballpark in 1999 and then spent 13 years going to spring trainings. And he really got to be close with Derek Jeter, Jorge Posada, Tino Martinez, Paul O'Neill, that whole next generation of Yankees. But what they're mentioning there, what Roger Angel says about Grandpa abolishing the strike zone, he really never struck out. There's only two players in the history of all of Major League Baseball, not just the Yankees, with more than 350 home runs and fewer than 500 strikeouts. It's Grandpa and Joe DiMaggio. And if you look at his 1950 season, I think it's one of the greatest seasons in the history of baseball. 656 plate appearances. He hit 322 with 28 home runs, 124 RBIs, and struck out 12 times in the entire season.
What did managing mean to him?
He really loved to mentor younger players, and he, my Uncle Dale, who played for my grandfather with the Yankees, and he played with the Pirates as well, he talks about what a great player's manager Grandpa was because he cared about the kids, the players, so much as people. You know, if Dave Rigetti, you know, blew a game or something, Grandpa would knock on the hotel room door 3 hours after the game and, hey, kid, are you all right? I just want to make sure you're feeling okay about tomorrow. You're going to do great. Like, managers don't do that. He really cared about the people, like teaching the game to folks. And, you know, he did that with both the Yankees and the Mets. He was the second manager in history to bring teams from both leagues to the World Series. And it was an important part of his career. For
Wasn't he manager of the Mets in 73?
He was.
That brought him to the World Series.
Yep.
One win away from beating the Athletics.
Yep.
To come back like he did. That was a big comeback year, wasn't it?
And that's the origin of his most famous yogiism ever, it ain't over till it's over.
Right, and then too bad the Athletics were so talented.
Yeah,
that was a great team. Were you a big baseball fan?
I mean, you couldn't not be in my family. The games were just always on. Grandpa was a fan of all sports, so he got me into ice hockey growing up. I played hockey in high school. And
how many grandchildren did he have?
11.
And you, did you find yourself more akin to him? Did you feel yourself more attached to him maybe than the others?
I think I was just around him for the most time. My parents also got divorced when I was young, around 5, and I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house. They were kind of like a second set of parents to me. And Grandpa and I kind of bonded over a lot of things. He got me into boxing as a young kid. We used to watch fights together. He used to come to all my hockey games in the winter because he was around during the winter because baseball only happens in the summer. You know, he was real into Seinfeld reruns. We'd be up there watching those with him and, you know, making meatballs on the holidays and whatnot. He was really involved with all the grandkids, but as the oldest one, I obviously spent the most time.
Wow. Is it hard to do this and not miss him?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. I'm constantly amazed with how close to the surface the emotions are with regard to both my Grandpa Yogi and my Grammy Carmen. And it's such a gift, this movie, with all the archival footage and being able to see video. There's not many 45-year-old people who have video of their grandparents in their mid-20s, and
wow.
I can see them talking and their mannerisms. He looks just like my brother Larry, which is great. I didn't know my grandpa at the age that my brother is, but they look just alike. And then also just to be able to see that old archival footage in the documentary of Grandpa hitting. He used a really big, long, heavy bat, 34-inch, 35 or 36-ounce bat, which is unheard of today, and he wasn't the biggest guy, and you watch him manhandle it through the strike zone and basically do whatever whatever he wants with the ball. It's really cool to be able to watch all that stuff.
I mean, his wrists and forearms must have been massive.
Meat hooks. Has,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way you said it. I should have said that. Iconically, I never saw him play, but famously when Don Larson tosses the perfect game, Yogi hugs him.
Yeah.
Here's Don Larson talking about that. Cut 45.
Larson is ready, gets the sign. Two strikes, ball one. Here comes the pitch. Strike three. A no-hitter, a perfect game for Don Larson. Yogi Berra runs out there. He leaps on Larson, and he's swarmed by his teammates. Listen to this crowd roar.
So we didn't hear him talk about that, but he does talk about it. What did that mean to him?
Grandpa used to say that was that was a perfect game in the 1956 World Series, and Grandpa used to say it ain't been done before and it ain't been done since. It's the only one. My favorite little known fact about that game, though, my grandmother was watching the game in the stands with Whitey Ford's wife, Joni, and the final batter in that game was Dale Mitchell. And my grandmother is 7 months pregnant at the time, and she says to Joni Ford, if we get this batter out and he gets this perfect game, I'll name my baby Dale, and I have an Uncle Dale.
That is unbelievable. I remember Dale Berry played third base for the Yankees.
Yeah.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I did not. No one probably knew that.
Nope.
All right. And that was great. Now, Don Larson was a little bit like David Wells, who would also, from the same town, I think, and also throw a perfect game. They like to party a little bit. Didn't they have that reputation?
They do. And Don actually didn't know he was pitching that game and may or may not have been out a little too late the night before. And when he rolled up to Yankee Stadium, the ball was in his locker. And surprise, surprise. But Grandpa was able to that was one of the things that Grandpa was known for, being able to get the most out of pitchers and get the most out of their stuff on any given day. And Don says that 97 pitches, he never shook Grandpa off once.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Lindsay Bear is here. The documentary is now out. It ain't over. When we come back, we're to see it, and at what timing we can go over this, right?
Sure.
Because you put your heart and soul into this. You want everyone to check it out.
I do.
Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diablo 4 arrives on June 6th. As the forces of hell gather, only you can stand in their way. Journey across the expansive open world of Sanctuary. Choose from 5 powerful classes to fit your playstyle. Adventure with your friends in 4-player co-op with crossplay and cross-progression on all platforms on June 6th. Hell welcomes all. Pre-purchase now at Diablo4.blizzard.com. Rated M for mature. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Till the day he died, he knew Jackie was out. He knew Jackie's and he got volatile.
He's out. Just ask Yogi, right? I mean, he told that story year after year, and you could get him going with it.
Yogi? Evan.
Jackie what? Robinson stopped.
Out. No, what do you mean he was out?
Oh, my God. No, forget about that. Now, when you want to get Yogi upset, Yogi, I think he was safe. And he looked at me like, Moreno, he was out. No, Yogi, I mean, I'm looking at the video. I think he was safe. He was out.
He used to get mad at me, too, man. I used to go, oh, Yogi, he was safe. You know, he was safe. And he used to go, oh bull, he was out.
So that is all Yogi Berra's friends and teammates and opponents talking about Jackie Robinson, whether he was out or safe. Set the scene for me, Lindsay Berra. After all, you have a documentary out about your grandfather. It ain't over.
So Jackie Robinson stole home in the 1955 World Series, and the umpire, Bill Summers, called him safe, and it's the maddest I've ever seen my grandfather in real life or on video. He jumped out of his crouch, and I always say he was like rootin' tootin' mad, like Yosemite Sam, the veins popping out of his neck, screaming and yelling at Bill Summers. And, you know, it just it's become one of the most famous plays in World Series history. Grandpa insisted until the day he died that Jackie had been out. But, you know,
the Dodgers won that one, right?
The Dodgers.
Did they end up winning that one?
They lost that game, actually, but they won that World Series in 55. But I kind of like to take the high road on this and say with Jackie Robinson, safe or out didn't really matter. What mattered was that he was in the big leagues. But Grandpa and Jackie were very, very good friends, and the family stayed very close even after Jackie passed in 1972. At Grandpa Yogi's 90th birthday party in 2015, Rachel Robinson, Jackie's widow, rolled in. And there's a whole bunch of people in the theater at the museum, and she sees Grandpa through the crowd, and she makes the safe sign with her arms, and Grandpa makes the out sign with his fist, and then she went and gave him a big hug and a big kiss. So
wow.
We Bears and Robinsons agree to disagree on that one.
Wow, that is so interesting. And just to be, you know, to see the Polo Grounds, I never saw it. I never saw Ebbets Field. Yankee Stadium still exists. It just moved across the street as they got it rebuilt again. So you're when they talk about, and I know people are listening around the country now, mm-hmm. when they talk about the Polo Grounds in Ebbets Field, when your grandfather used to talk about, did he talk about the rivalries between the Giants and Dodgers then?
It's funny. People ask me this a lot, and he talked less about the rivalries and more about his friendships with guys on the other teams. You know, he was very, very close with Gil Hodges,
Dodgers.
You know, yeah, and like Roy Campanella and Duke Snyder, and they were all just buddies. And when the shot hit around the world, home run, Grandpa was at the game. Like he would go over there and watch on his days off the games on the National
Dodgers
League side
Giants.
To know who he would just kind of to check out who he'd be playing in the World Series. But they would attend each other's games. They would go out to dinners together. So yes, while the rivalry, it was, you know, a great kind of Subway Series rivalry happening there in New York, they were all kind of buddies.
And Lindsay, I never knew that. What you just said, that blows me away. I thought they might meet each other at card shows, but I didn't know they were. When they were contemporaries, but they were actually friendly.
Back then, Grandpa and my grandmother, my Grammy Carmen, used to talk about New York being a really small town back then. And if you were a famous person, if you were an actor, a politician, a musician, a famous athlete, there were only like a few places, like high-end places where those kind of folks would hang out. It was Toots Shores, the 21 Club, the Copacabana, the Birdcage up in Harlem. So you ran into all those folks. You know, my grandfather had a crush on Sophia Loren because he saw Sophia Loren on the regular at the 21 Club or wherever the heck they would go. And I remember my grandmother would tell me about eating dinner with Roger Bannister when he was trying to break the four-minute mile. It was a smaller town and kind of everybody knew everybody and those friendships existed.
Which it brings me to my next question. They needed off-season jobs. They weren't multimillionaires back
no.
then. I mean, so he made the most he ever made in one year was?
$60,000, but more years it was like $45,000, $48,000, $50,000, which is about the equivalent of $500,000 today, which is a good living, but it's not like, you know, crazy boku bucks like guys are making today.
Had to have jobs in the off-season. What are some of Yogi Berra's jobs?
He sold Christmas trees in a like landscapey type lot on the hill in St. Louis. He worked at the American Shops in Newark selling suits, men's suits. He worked in a hardware store. He was not good at any of these things. So he and his buddy Phil Rizzuto, shortstop for the Yankees, in 1958, they opened a bowling alley in Clifton, New Jersey, Rizzuto Berra Lanes. And that was their off-season source of income for many years.
And did it do well?
It did. It did great. It was there for a while, and then it became Astro Bowl in the 80s, I think. But it was like a real family affair. My grandfather's brother, John, moved from St. Louis to run the bar, and Phil's brother actually managed the bowling side of it.
Wow, that's fantastic. So you put together this documentary because you're concerned about people forgetting how great your grandfather was. Where can we see it in the theaters?
So right now it is open in theaters across the country, New York, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Chicago, San Diego, San Francisco. It's opening in more cities each week throughout the rest of May and June. So Dallas and Kansas City this weekend, then Denver, all over Florida, Atlanta, Portland, New Orleans. You can hit the website itaintovermovie.com and check the listings near you.
How does your uncle and your father feel about them keeping the name alive? And
I mean, they're all thrilled. My dad and my uncles are all in the movie telling, you know, fantastic stories about Grandpa and what it was like growing up with him and Grammy Carmen. It's a really nostalgic film, and my whole family's very proud of it. But I do want to make it very clear that while there is a lot of baseball in the movie and it will satisfy the, you know, uber baseball fan, you don't have to be a baseball fan to see this movie. As a first-generation Italian immigrant, a veteran of the D-Day invasion, Grandpa had a beautiful 65-year love story with my Grammy Carmen. There's something in this movie that appeals to everyone as a human story, and you really don't have to be like a baseball nut to enjoy it.
And the yogiisms throughout?
The yogiisms throughout, even though I do think that personality and the yogiisms overshadowed Grandpa's accomplishments on the field, the yogiisms are a big part of who he was. And I think the film really highlights the brilliance of the yogiisms. If you initially say, oh, that's silly, maybe. But then when you really think about it, they're profound. And I think
they
genius.
Are. Yeah. I love every time I go to see a crowded place, I go, that place is so crowded, nobody ever goes there anymore.
Right?
I think about that's yoga.
It's deja vu all over again all the time. My favorite is The World Were Perfect. If the world were perfect, it wouldn't be. And who can really argue with that?
It ain't over. Lindsay Barrett, thank you.
Fearless and Proud podcast series looks at acts of bravery and strength by women. And in the first season, we'll look at women who played important roles in the Civil War. In episode 3, we'll be looking at two intriguing women of the war. First, Cuban-born Loretta Janetta Velazquez, who was sent to the United States for an education by her well-to-do Spanish family. We then move on to the legendary Harriet Tubman. We'll discuss her time as a nurse, soldier, and spy for the Union Army, and talk about the Cumbie River Raid, a turning point in the war. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.